back together again, you and I, on a Tuesday, August the 29th of 2023. On Connecticut Today, we welcome to Quinnipiac University Management Professor Angela Matty back to the program to chat about news that Medicare will start negotiating prices on some key drugs. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio stopped by with her weekly update, and I had a few thoughts again on more local crime issues. You may have heard here on the radio station earlier, reading online today or watching in the local and national TV news, a push now finally to do something that people have been saying, at least half of the people in the country have been saying for years, needed to happen. And this has to do with Medicare and the government negotiating prices for Medicare drug coverage for some pretty popular drugs. And there's already pushback from the industry. But what is this all about? And joining us right now is one of our go-to people on health issues, Professor Angela Matty, professor of management at Quinnipiac University and an authority on health care issues. Hey, Professor, it's Paul again. Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm fine, Paul. Thank you for having us, and I'm certainly delighted to talk about this subject.
Yeah, let's talk about this, Professor. Now, for somebody who's, and I'm not there yet, I got a few more years to go, thankfully, but for somebody who isn't really in tune with Medicare yet, they still have their private coverage like I do, kind of set the groundwork here. What is being discussed here, and why has this always been such a hot potato?
So, that's a great question. 20 years ago, I had the honor and privilege of being a fellow on the United States Health Committee. And we would all look at each other in the break room and say, why doesn't Medicare have the ability to negotiate prices? You know, if you have 65 million people like we do on the Medicare rolls, that's a lot of buying power. Well, there was a pretty complex but simple answer to that, and that the pharmaceutical companies have a really sophisticated and highly funded advocacy organization that was very successful in keeping this buying power of Medicare from negotiating prices. But due to, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act, that's no longer so. So Department of Health and Human Services announced 10 drugs as a start that will fall under the ability to negotiate prices and to get things under control. And these are drugs that are prevalent or high use in the Medicare population that have to do with treatment of diabetes, hypertension, blood clots, et cetera. And this is one small step. After these 10 are introduced into the marketplace, then there'll be a phase-in approach to adding drugs to this list. So right now we have things like Eliquis, Jardiance for diabetes. We have Stelara for Crohn's disease, IBD, other drugs for diabetes. So I would say to your listeners, if the medication you're on is not on the list, be hopeful, because there is a phased-in approach. And we are finally have our a good policy trump politics related to this. And no pun intended on that one.
Now, the big pharmaceutical companies are saying they're going to take legal action here. They don't like it. No surprise there. But we get word that the Biden White House has said now that the first 10 drugs have been submitted, a list of some basic drugs that they want to allow Medicare to have the power to negotiate the buying price with the big drug companies. Professor Angela Matty joins us, Quinnipiac University. And Professor, a couple of those drugs are familiar to me. I used to be on Januvia. I'm on Jardiance right now. Works well. But I got to tell you, every time I go to my local store to get the prescription filled, you know, I look down and my deductible is, I think, through our insurance here at Connoisseur, I think $40 or $45 a month. Then I look at the regular retail price of, you know, I guess pre-negotiation from what our healthcare carrier did with, I forget who makes Jardiance. It's close to $700. So I can see where this can get a little contentious, right?
Oh, absolutely, Paul. You know, Right now, this Inflation Reduction Act is just focused on Medicare patients and a phased-in approach. But I like to give the example. My daughter has Crohn's disease. She's on something called Humira twice a month.
Yeah.
And when we look at the invoice, it's $13,000.
Wow.
So, you know, my greatest fear is that she, you know, somehow becomes has a gap in employment and no insurance coverage. So, you know, my hope is, and what would reflect good policy, is the model that's being set up now in Medicare gets extended to private payers like our Blue Cross, Blue Shield, mm-hmm. our Anthems of the world. And, you know, this actually, I never thought we would see a day like this in my lifetime because, you know, having been a fellow on the Hill two times and seeing, you know, these lobbyists, very sophisticated lobbyists about what goes on in the Hill and very well-funded lobbyists walk up and be able to keep a policy that makes sense off the, you know, off the legal rolls all these years is amazing. What's great about this is that because it's a government program, the government has both the ability to institute this, but they also have to stick to implement it. So pharmaceutical companies could say, well, I don't want to play. Okay, then you lose 65 million cups
of life. Yeah, yeah. So there is strength in numbers. What do you, Professor Matty, what would your comment be? And I know you may have to be careful about this. I understand. But, you know, the pharma companies, of which I actually have relatives who work in them, are saying, well, two things here. You know, the money we make from drugs, you know, funds our stock price, and a lot of people own our stock. And number two, they're already using the argument today, well, innovation, like a lot of the money we make goes into research, you know, the FDA process and all that. What are your thoughts on what they're saying?
So I don't disagree, but I'm not against businesses, and they are businesses making money. It's a question of how much money, and it's a question of equity. You know, when we look at, you know, the drug that you mentioned, the drug that my daughter's on twice a month, you know, the costs have, you know, got on the railroad track and kept on escalating and escalating. You know, there has to be something put in place to look at and say, this is reasonable. This is reasonable in terms of the pharmaceutical companies and their ability to make money, mm-hmm. both for their shareholders, but also for research and development. But also there's a balance between equity and what's reasonable. And when you look at, you know, most Medicare beneficiaries are now paying $6,500 out of pocket.
Yeah.
For drugs, and having to make decisions about, do I buy cat food? Do I buy food for myself for the week? Or do I purchase my life-saving drug? And, you know, that has to be a balance. And what I say is, and, you know, the good thing about being a professor is I can say things. And what I want to say is, you know, it's time that someone said to the pharmaceutical companies, enough is enough. You know, we're not against you making money. Every business should make money. There should be, you know, a fair amount of allocation for innovation,
sure.
for research and development. But there has to also be a consideration about care and equity and accessibility for healthcare.
And you know, Professor Matty, one thing here that I have to ask you that I've always wondered about. We have such brilliant people in this country, and a lot of people, brilliant people who work in government entities, the military. You know, we landed on the moon 50 and change years ago with archaic technology compared to what we have today. I've often wondered why there has never been, and maybe you answered it already a few times today, why there's never been a push in order to hold costs down of the federal government, like setting up drug-making operations and saying, okay, we have brilliant scientists that can work for the feds, and we can run these companies as essentially nonprofits. Everybody will get paid, and our drug costs would plummet. Am I suggesting something idiotic or not?
No, No, you're not. It's hard to unravel what's been established, number one.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have a pharmaceutical industry that by far is the safest, is the most efficacious in the world.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We have a really stringent, critical clinical trial process. And by the time drugs get to market, they're relatively safe, and safe compared to other industrialized countries. So you have a well-established system. It's hard to unravel something, but along with that, well-established, well-oiled, and, you know, I would say clinically safe system, mm-hmm. you also have costs that have just skyrocketed because we don't have normal economic principles yeah. in the healthcare industry. Somebody else is paying the bill.
Yeah.
You know, third party's paying the bill. And that third party, in this instance, Medicare, is saying, wait, slow down.
Yeah.
Slow down, costs are out of control, and we need to rein it in.
Great stuff.
So, you know, and it's a good stuff. It's a good day for healthcare. It's a good day for our seniors. And I think it's a great example that your policy has won over in the politics in this one, at least for the time being.
At least for the time being. We'll see how it all shakes out. Good to have Professor Angela Matty with us, professor of management and specializing in healthcare issues at Quinnipiac. Professor, thank you, and I'm sure we'll talk down the road. Take care. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Paul. Much appreciation to you and everything you're doing.
Appreciate it. Take care. Bye-bye. All right. There you go. So, you know, 10 often used drugs by people on Medicare. And Professor Matty explaining to us there that, you know, for years, I guess, these companies who make these drugs. And again, I was on Januvia. Good drug. I got switched to Jardiance as I've gotten a little older now. Works well. But in the case, and I've always had those paid for by private insurance, but in this case now, if you don't really understand what's going on, you're not a Medicare beneficiary yet. Basically, in the past, there has been no capacity for Medicare, or there's been a kind of a gentleman's or gentlewomen's agreement between, you know, Congress and the White House and these big drug companies like, hey, you know, you're going to pay for these drugs on Medicare, certain drugs, the price or the per subscriber rate that kind of the drug companies think is fair. And now there'll be at least a little negotiation. How well it'll work, who knows? But that can only be good. So I was with a bunch of people yesterday, and we just got talking to, hey, what's in the news? I heard your show the other day, and somebody said to me, they said, Paul. I said, yes, me being the only Paul in the room. And I said, you can tell, folks, it's the 5 o'clock hour. It always happens. But somebody said, hey, what's the deal with this thing with EVs and 2035 and 2027? And well, I can't buy a gasoline-powered car. Is this a law? Is it a mandate? I said, those are all good questions. And a lot of people are angry on it, and a lot of people are following the issue, including our next guest, our regular Tuesday 507 contributor, Megan Portfolio, Yankee Institute. Check her out online, yankeeinstitute.org. Her latest column, EVs in Connecticut Save Money, Just Not Like Other States. And this is a topic that keeps the gift that keeps on giving. Megan Portfolio is with us. Hey, Megan, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
I'm good, and I'm glad you sent me this. You wanted to talk to me about this because I was with some people yesterday, and they're like, well, I don't get it. Like, why are they forcing me to do this? Am I going to be forced? Is there no force? What do I do with the cars that I have in 2027 and 2035? There's a lot of confusion about this, Megan, and you have an interesting piece you just sent me.
Oh, yeah, there is a lot of confusion about it, and I don't think that the powers that be even have the answers to all of your questions. But I'm glad you actually brought up the car ban, which the ban of new cars starting in 2035. The Department of Energy and Environmental Protection actually extended the comment period till tomorrow. So if you haven't, or your listeners haven't weighed in yet, check us out at yankeeinstitute.org and click on the Take Action button to make yourself heard.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I found an interesting study that was just done on the cost savings of filling up your gas car versus filling up your EV with electricity. Because, you know, I wanted to know, just for my own personal curiosity,
sure.
I mean, how much am I really saving? So the good news is all 50 states and Washington, D.C. do actually show a cost saving. So
okay.
kudos
mm-hmm.
to all you EV buyers.
Yep.
However, in Connecticut, we basically save less than half of what the top state, Washington, saves. For example, if I were to buy a F-150 truck out in Washington State,
mm-hmm.
and you bought a equivalent to an EV of that, you would actually save $81.68 per tank fill-up,
mm-hmm.
which is great.
Yeah.
I mean, I might even consider buying one of those.
Mm-hmm.
However, if that same transaction took place in Connecticut, you would only save $31.87, which is still great.
Yeah.
But it could be better. And it just gets worse when you go down to sedans. You're only going to save $28 versus $60, and SUVs, it's about $20 versus $50. So we're really getting, I'm trying to think of a word that I can use on the radio.
Yeah, yeah, no.
Out here in Connecticut.
Yeah, and the thing too, Megan, is this, and, you know, we're starting to see this. I know Governor Greg Abbott just did this in Texas, who, you know, it's not like it's going to be an Uber-free ride here, because you have states like Texas who are saying, well, wait a minute. It's great that some people buy EVs, but they're not paying the gasoline tax. So, you know, a lot of EV owners in Texas, I don't know whether you saw this, recently said, well, okay, we're okay with paying 50 or 60 bucks a year. And Governor Abbott said, no, we're going to charge you $200 a year, and that may go up. So, you know, and Megan, that will likely eat into people's savings as well.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to take out my crystal ball right now. They're doing this pilot program. I think it's the DMV, DOT. They're doing a program where they're tracking your vehicle miles traveled.
I'm actually part of that. I'm actually part of that.
Get your $100.
Not. I told my listeners, Megan, why do you think I'm doing this? Hey, listen, $100 gift card, I'm in. No, I don't have it yet, but I've got the little gizmo plugged into my car, yes, because I'm anxious to see this. But no, to answer your basic question, I don't have my gift card yet. No.
Oh, typical.
Yeah.
But I see them actually just getting rid of the gas tax. Well, fingers crossed to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And just switching over to this vehicle miles traveled, because it's not right. I mean, the electric cars, I mean, they're great for the environment, blah, blah, blah. But they are heavier. Those batteries are so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing a number on our roads. And they're free riders. No offense to your listeners that have EV. But
yeah. No, it's,
you're
it's
not
fair.
Really
it's
paying
fair.
The gas tax because you don't need gas.
Yeah, and again, and I know people will say, Megan, well, you know, my God, you know, I shouldn't be taxed because I drive so far to work. Well, you should, because you would have paid that in gasoline taxes anywhere. So it just shows how much of this, you know, is going to shake out here. Now, I want to go back to something you said earlier. So they've extended the comment period on this till tomorrow. Why were they? You think they were in any way surprised or a little flabbergasted by how many comments they got on this, or the tenor of comments, or they just don't care? What do you think?
I know the Senate Republicans did ask. Well, they first asked, for a month extension, and that was denied. Or maybe it was a couple weeks. Anyway, that was denied. But then they asked to extend the comment periods. I don't know if that was the reason why they extended it. When I keep checking I keep trolling the e-regulation site to look for the comments because I'm curious, and they haven't posted them. And I did actually reach out to them, the office that runs that site, and asked, you know, where can I find these comments? And I haven't gotten a reply back yet, because I know for a fact a lot of people that follow Yankee Institute have submitted comments, but they just haven't posted them yet, so I don't know.
Now, you and I have talked about this. In fact, somebody at that gathering I was at yesterday asked this, and they said, well, you know, and this is somebody who doesn't follow it as closely as we do, well, did they actually vote on this? I said, well, yes and no. They voted back in 2004, as you and I have talked about, to go with the California regulations, but what am I hearing now, and I think we've talked about this, that there's so much blowback on this, Megan, that, you know, the General Assembly may actually be forced to go online or on record and vote on this in the coming short session about, well, okay, what do we do about this vehicle phase in or phase out?
I mean, it's the right thing to do. I mean, there's just such pushback and so many people in this. I mean, this will affect anyone of driving age in the state. It's the right thing to do. Let the public weigh in, and then decide. Make it through the process, the legislative process. Don't have some bureaucrat just come in and say, with a flick of a pen, mm-hmm. "Hey, that's it for the new gas cars, you guys. Too okay. bad, so sad."
Now at 5:16, let's see, it's 5:15 and 26 seconds. Let me tell you, we're going to timestamp this now. We know that the coming year, Megan, is 2024, and it's an election year for the men and women in Hartford in the General Assembly. How much do you want to make a bet that, maybe we need, Megan, I don't know, another year of study on this or a year and a half? Because Lord knows we don't want to vote on this during an election year. You willing to do a pinky bet with me that we get this put off for a year or so or not? Are they going to dig in their heels here and go with this?
That's a good one, because when they can't get anything done, that's what they do. They do, let's do a study. We can't get across
yes.
the finish line. Let's study it some more. I don't know. I think it just depends on the voters. Are you guys going to call and contact them and express your views on this and really, really push them? If a lawmaker gets 10, 15 calls, they get nervous, because
yeah.
their only job in life is to get reelected.
Yeah.
So when they start feeling the pressure, that's when they start doing things like look at tolls, look at TCI. Like, the people spoke out on that, and we crushed that. You know,
yeah,
we were up against the odds on that, and we killed both of those issues.
And you and I both know that 10 or 15 calls is a lot. You know, every one of the people, I don't know what the ratio you think it is, but one or two people call, that means there's a bunch of people, Megan, who feel that way but just aren't, you know, predisposed to call. So we'll see. Check it out, folks, yankeeinstitute.org, the Hartford portfolio with the aforementioned Megan Portfolio. Megan, thank you. We'll chat with you next week. Be good.
All right, have a good week. Bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. There you go. All right. So they've now, how about that, folks? Maybe I'm amazed at the way you love me all the time. No, maybe I'm amazed that legislators in Hartford, maybe they're getting a little kind of antsy on this and saying, hey, we have to run for re-election next year. Maybe we should put this whole EV thing off. Maybe you're getting under their skin. So again, I beg you over and over and over again, when you are approached by somebody in your city or town who is running for mayor, running for city council, running for town council, running for the Board of Alders, running for first selectman or first selectwoman, and they tell you, well, I've done this on taxes, and I've done this on the playground, and I've done this on the municipal fields, I beg you, tell them, well, that's all nice. What are you doing on crime? What are you doing to keep me safer? Are you standing behind our police department and our firefighters and first responders? And are you keeping track of the degenerates walking around our city and town? Because a lot of them will get uncomfortable if you ask them about that. Now, if they have an appropriate record, they should feel okay in doing this. What am I talking about? Well, here's an example, and I know there's a lot of different jurisdictions here, but I got a couple of examples I want to start the show off with today. And by the way, if you want to join us in all this merriment, you can, simply by dialing. Put your finger in the hole and twirl it around the ring of the phone here. Oh, we don't do that anymore. That's right. We tap our fingers now, or press little buttons. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. How about this? I got a couple of stories here that are going to make your jaw hit the ground. Or maybe they won't. Maybe they won't because you're going to throw your arms up in the air and say, well, whatever. Now, I know we've had guests on this show, and the governor always talks about it, and we hear this and that about, well, you know, violent crime is down, and we're trying to get fewer people in prison, which I say is the polar opposite of what we should be doing. We should be putting even more people in prison to get through their thick skulls on a first or second offense. We don't tolerate this stuff, but I digress. Let's start with this one. This is according to the Wallingford Patch, patch.com/Connecticut/Wallingford. And Patch is still around. They've, established a nice little network of local online publications. An 18-year-old car thief was arrested in Wallingford twice in 8 hours. There you go. An 18-year-old car thief, so I guess that's technically an adult. Oh, man. An 18-year-old car thief was arrested twice in 8 hours. Twice in 8 hours. That's according to police in Wallingford. The 18-year-old was caught trying to steal a car, then was arrested again after stealing another car several hours later. All right. Is anybody awake? And here's the story. An 18-year-old Meriden resident, shocking, was arrested twice within 8 hours in connection with the burglary and theft of vehicles, plural, in Wallingford late Sunday night into early yesterday morning. Police responded to the McGuire Court Apartments around 10 p.m. on Sunday on the report of a car theft in progress. A caller reported that a male wearing a black hoodie, shocking, and black sweatpants, what a surprise, that's not in Patch, I'm adding that little thing to you, tried to steal a silver 2011 Kia Soul, again, shocking, Hyundai or a Kia. Arriving officers found a male fitting the clothing description sitting reclined in the front driver's seat of the Kia, and the steering column and the ignition was, what a surprise, detached. He was in possession of a large flathead screwdriver. What a surprise. And a USB cable, the cables used in the Hyundai and Kia thefts. We've been telling you about this, folks. If you have a Kia or you have a Hyundai, make sure your car, if it doesn't have and it does not have an ignition immobilizer, to get the software update. The suspect was identified as 18-year-old Cody James Monty of Meriden. Okay. All right. So arrested and charged with third-degree burglary, possession of burglary tools, and using a motor vehicle without the owner's permission. Now, all right, so you're saying to yourself, what's the big deal, Paul? What's the big deal? We found a car thief. Ah, but as they say on those 2 a.m. infomercials when you can't sleep, but wait, there's more. Monty was initially held in lieu of a $10,000 bond, which means he would have to come up with, in some way, $1,000. It's 10% of whatever the bond is. So he would have to put up a bank account, an automobile that he preferably owned and wasn't trying to steal, a home, whatever. So Monty was initially held in lieu of a $10,000 bond and given a court date of September 8th. Now, I got to remember, this is, what time did this happen? This happened 10 p.m. on Sunday night. All right? So sometime on Sunday night into early Monday morning, follow along with me here, somebody says, okay, it's a $10,000 bond and your court date is September 8th. The bail commissioner, now whoever that is, I don't know, I don't have a name. I've been sniffing around with some friends of mine in the area. They have an idea, but I don't want to say. The bail commissioner. Now, understand something, folks. The cops got the guy. So the fine men and women of our police departments, a lot of times they do what we ask them to do, sometimes for not great pay. But here they are in Wallingford. They find a guy from one town up in Meriden trying to jack somebody's car, and they arrest him. All right. Pretty routine thing. He says, listen, you got to go to court September 8th. And he's given a $10,000 bond. They let him go. The bail commissioner granted Monty a promise to appear. I promise. What's that old wedding song they used to play? Oh, promise me. Oh, my God. He walked out of the Wallingford Police Department because they let him. Then, at 3:35 a.m. the next morning, about, what, 4 hours later, police had to go to the Cumberland Farms on North Colony Road. You know where that is, folks. Right next to the Stop and Shop, right next to the 99, in the middle, you know, right near Route 68 and Route 15. Then the cops, like 4 hours later, go to the Cumberland Farms on Route 5 on the report of a theft of a black Mazda CX-9. Now, that's about 2.1 miles away from the Wallingford PD and about a 45-minute walk. Yes, it is, according to police, because I've done that walk. I tend to walk in that area a lot on the weekends and after work here to de-stress from reading stuff like this. After reviewing video footage captured at the Cumberland Farms, Monty was seen taking the black Mazda CX-9 that was left unattended, unlocked, and running at a gas pump. Oh, no. Don't do that. Wallingford may be safe at 8 Mayberry. At 5:30 a.m., so let's move the hours. The big hand, the little hand. We started this at 10 a.m. Our story continues at 5:30 a.m. Monty was apprehended by Meriden Police, thank you, Meriden Police, at his home and again placed under arrest by the Wallingford Police. He was charged with larceny of a motor vehicle. He was held in lieu of a not. Now they got the bond up to $25,000, and he appeared in court yesterday morning. Oh, my God. Now, I messaged a couple of people I know that can explain the legalities of this. And I got a message back from one of my friends saying, hey, and he read this story. He said, well, apparently the reason that this guy was let go earlier in this 8 hour, run here, in this 8 hour time frame, was likely that there were no prior arrests. Likely, not definitely, but they will let somebody go like that if there are no prior arrests, so they don't see a pattern developing. So they let the guy go. Okay, see you later. You got that court appearance, right? Yeah, oh, yeah, I'll be in court. Yeah, I'll be there. And the guy walks 2 miles north, probably up North Main Street there to the back of the Cumberland Farms, and just walks down. Ah, oh, there's some dummy who left the car running at 4 a.m. I'll take this. See you later. So again, folks, don't blame the police. It is not the fault of the police. Here you had two departments, one in Wallingford and one in Meriden, who did their jobs. Guy tries to steal one car. The Wallingford police get him. And for whatever reason, whoever the bail commissioner was at that hour said, let the guy go. Don't even hold him to the morning. God forbid we hold the guy or the gal till the morning. Just let him walk right out. What are we doing? Because if you hold him to the morning, and again, I'm not faulting the cops here. They have to do sometimes what the bondsman or the bail commissioner says. But this is ridiculous. We're losing our minds here. Well, you know, as a couple of my friends said, they probably said, well, no major prior record, so we're going to let him go. So in the middle of the night, you're going to let him go. And then he goes and he walks a little over 2 miles, takes about 45 minutes. I've walked that route. I know it well. and he steals somebody else's car. So we have an alleged criminal. We get the alleged criminal. We say, okay, see you later. Don't forget about that court appearance. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Hey, take him again. Oh, my God. Man, that's some testicular fortitude there. Some guy steals cars, or arrested twice. Tried to steal one car, stole another one twice in 8 hours. Jeez. Why are we so lenient with first-time offenders? If anything, we should be hard on first-time offenders. Let them know this is unacceptable. Let's go to the phones here. Mary Jane in Bridgeport. Mary Jane, good afternoon. How are you?
Good. How are you, Paul?
I'm good, Mary Jane. I'm trying to keep my head from exploding reading this stuff.
I'm going to explode. Here's a proposal to you. Something I shared with our governor and his peers. I feel that. What would you imagine crime would be like if there was a fine for every crime committed? For larceny, it's $10,000 plus community service. No question about it. No bonds to be paid, none of that. You pay a fine of $10,000 plus community service, commensurate with the amount of the crime.
You know, that's interesting, Mary Jane, because I would imagine it might make at least some people think, well, wait a minute, if I get caught here, I'm going to be in debt, like you said, 10, 15, 20 grand. Maybe some people might think twice. I would hope so.
I would hope so also. And if for some reason you can't pay all the fine, then your community service would be doubled.
Yeah.
You could only pay $5,000. You'd spend a year in community service. And by that, I don't mean at a prison. I mean at a local jail where your crime was committed. You would stay there, clean up, do whatever you have to do, because every city has a jail. And that way you don't have to keep building prisons, save the taxpayers' money. And then I don't care how often you do it, as often as you do it, you'll be charged a fine, whether it's burglary, whether it's larceny, whether it's property damage, whether it's petty theft. It doesn't matter your age, you're paying a fine and you're doing community service both. Mm. If you can't pay the full fine, your community service time is doubled.
That's
answer to stuff like that.
You know, and Mary Jane, I think that's very creative thinking, but you know what would happen here, and you sound like somebody who's in tune with this, and I think this is interesting, and it merits some discussion, but then they would say, well, Mary Jane, Ms. Concerned Citizen, that sounds good, but we would have to go in and alter in some small or large way the entire penal code of the state of Connecticut, which to me, I say, fine, go ahead, but you know how long that might take.
It won't take long if you have open-minded people who are tired of crime and tired of charging the taxpayers for the crime. Let the crime go to those who commit it. If you can't commit the crime and can't pay the fine, don't commit it. It's like speeding, except it's bumped up to larceny, burglary, property damage, theft, kidnapping, etc. Except for murder. That one you should go to jail for.
Yeah. Mary Jane, I do have to run. Thank you so much for the call. Some clear-headed thinking there. Yeah, we never hear about fines, do we? We hear about bond, right? And we hear about, in some cases, usually in white-collar crime, we hear about, you know, people who are guilty have to make restitution, right? People on tax crimes or some sort of federal level. Well, so-and-so is, you know, 2 years suspended, 10 years probation, and the judge has ordered restitution on the theory that, well, if you stole some money, you should have most of it to pay back. If you don't, too bad, that's on you. Mary Jane, thank you. Interesting stuff here. But yeah, and again, I asked a friend of mine, I said, how does somebody walk out, not even wait till the morning to keep that person from walking down later in the morning? He stole the car from the Cumberland Farms at 4 a.m, but at least later in the day. And his friend of mine, you know, who is an attorney, said, well, they may have checked and there might have been no priors on this person who did that, this guy who did that, and he figures, okay, hey, it's a nice new day here. It's yesterday, Monday, the 28th. So let me take a stroll northbound up into the hinterlands of Wallingford. Oh, there's a car there. oh, it's running. It's at the gas pump in Cumberland Farms there. Let me just take the car and steal it. I wonder if he went inside Cumbie's and got a nice coffee beforehand. Maybe one of those nice pieces, slices of Cumberland Farms pizza sitting around. Hey, how you doing tonight? Good. And I'm like, you all said good. I'm okay, thanks. Pizza, coffee, we're all set. Thanks. I'm going to go out and take that car right now at the gas pump.